Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will take your calls now on what it's like to be stopped and frisked or to perform a stop and frisk. 212-433-WNYC. If you have been stopped and frisked, let's say any time in the last 10 years, any time while Mayor Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly have been in office, call in. Or if you have been a police officer who has performed stops and frisks during the last 10 years, please call in too. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And we're asking, of course, because of today's news that the latest NYPD figures are out, and that in 2011, there was a record number, a whopping 684,000 stop and frisk incidents. That is the highest on record, up 14% from the year before. And it is six times the number of stops and frisks since the first year that Mayor Bloomberg was in office. In other words, it has gone from about 100,000 something a year to 600,000 something under Bloomberg and Kelly. 87% of those stopped were black or Latino. And the annual debate is taking place about whether that's a result of profiling. The NYPD says no, that's who the crime suspects happen to be. So those stopped are those who resemble the suspects. Also, this is an anti-gun program. But as usual, the stops last year resulted in a tiny percentage of guns seized, about one out of every 650 stops, according to the Times today, or 1/15 of 1% of all stops resulted in the seizure of a gun. Another way to express that, 1,000 guns removed from the streets for the 684,000 people stop. Now, you will decide for yourself whether that is too much contact with law enforcement for a lot of young guys to be worth it, or whether no real harm was done to those who were stopped and then released. And, hey, there are 1,000 fewer guns on the streets of New York. But I thought we would take some time right now to humanize those numbers. We want you to call in if you have ever been stopped and frisked by the NYPD, or if you are a police officer or a former police officer who has ever stopped and frisked anyone. Please call us with your personal stories of these interactions. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I think many people hear about them in the abstract, but never have had the experience or heard it described blow by blow from either side. So you'll be performing a service if you call and describe your stop and frisk experience, either as a frisker or a friskee, 212-433-9692. Now, while your calls are coming in, there is the debate, as I said, taking place around this. Here is Manhattan Borough President and potential mayoral hopeful for the next time around, Scott Stringer.
I am today calling on Mayor Bloomberg to step out of the shadow of Commissioner Kelly and lead on this issue. You cannot hide anymore on an issue that is so compelling. The statistics are so obvious.
But on the other hand, here is Deputy Police Commissioner Paul Brown on our show a couple of years ago, asked about why people are stopped and frisked.
If there's a report of a bodega held up at gunpoint, for example, and it gives a description of a male in his 20s wearing dark sweatshirt running northbound on whatever, 7th Avenue, the immediate response, that's considered a heavy job where you have a gun and you have a robbery. Mm-hmm. Units in the immediate vicinity are responding en masse to that. They're stopping lots of people, maybe 10, 15, in the first minutes of it.
So there's the dispute. The NYPD, and there was Deputy Commissioner Brown, saying people are only stopped in response to a specific crime taking place in a specific area and a rough description of a suspect. And people stopped being stopped who look something like that suspect even if roughly. And Scott Stringer saying, no, this is way, way, way over the top. The guidelines are much too loose. People are being stopped for no good reason in too many cases, and there have to be fewer of these. But in any case, the news is 684,000 people stopped and frisked last year, a 14% increase over the year before, a record. And we're going to take some time to humanize those numbers. And right after this break, we'll go right to the calls and hear your stories of being stopped and frisked by the NYPD. Or if you're a police officer, and officers, please do call in, because we definitely want your side of what this experience is. Talk about being the frisker. 212-433-WNYC. And we'll take those calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So were you stopped and frisked, or are you a police officer who has stopped and has frisked? 212-433-WNYC. Daniel in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Brian. Best show on WNYC.
Thank you very much. So were you stopped and frisked?
Yes, I was, and then some.
Tell me about it.
Okay. So I was trying to make time on the subway platform going in between trains and J Street Metro Tech. And I wasn't riding my bicycle, but I was sort of skitching alongside it, which is illegal. I realized that. And a police officer stopped me, started writing me a ticket. And I was, of course, frustrated. And he then proceeded to go through my pockets.
Why did he go through your pockets? How did it go from giving you a ticket for illegal moving?
I have no
idea.
I mean, I guess that's stop and frisk. If I'm stopped for any reason, I can get frisked. Well, I'm assuming.
I don't think that's the way it's supposed to work. But what did he say? Did he say anything to you about why he was going to frisk you?
Not really. He just said, you know, I'm just checking. Do you have anything, like guns or anything on you? I don't know. This part is kind of blurry to me, but right. I just remember him. This might have, the frisking might have come after he called in, but I'm pretty sure it happened before. This was several months ago. So he calls into to headquarters and runs my name, and he said, are there any warrants, anything out there for you, or should we be on your record? Is there anything we should know about you? And I said, no, of course not. And so actually, I'm pretty sure he frisked me first. So he's sort of waiting to get a call back from his headquarters, and it's sort of really vague what's going on between him and headquarters. And he said,
briefly, did your name come up on their search?
Yes, it did. And he said, this is taking too long. And all of a sudden, before I know it, I'm in cuffs. And he takes my bike and hands me over to two other officers, and I'm taken into the Hoyt Skimmerhorn holding station, put in the back of a police car and taken over there. I'm in cuffs. They have me there for a while, holding me pretty much based on the fact that there's someone else with my name, but the last name is spelled with two letters that are interchanged. And they keep me there for a couple hours, treat me like a criminal, just exercise any kind of power they can on me. I just felt totally disrespected and just kind of like pretty much treated like a criminal, and realized that I was kind of just a small gear in the entire system of how stop and frisk works, and how this whole quota system works, where if you're stopped for anything, they're like, oh, well, this might lead to something else. Maybe we can find some weed on this kid.
Daniel, I'm gonna leave it there. I appreciate your story. Obviously a very unsatisfying interaction with the NYPD. Jim in the South Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you? I've been stopped several times, but never frisked. And that's because I'm actually a middle-aged college instructor, but I'm a tall black man, look a lot younger than I am, closer to 50 than to a 25-year-old would-be stop and frisk victim. And apparently that I don't look like most people's idea of a middle-aged college professor. Also, the way I dress is fairly casual. So I've been stopped, but it's interesting to watch how when I pull my ID out and they see who I am, the cops backpedal. Because you can almost see them backpedaling to sort of realizing they've made a mistake, quote-unquote, that I'm not who they're really looking to profile. So it's interesting to see that, to be stopped but not frisked once they sort of realize that their profiling is a little off.
So how does that make you feel about the whole system?
Well, I mean, well, it's obviously a racist system. And by the way, a lot of the times I've been stopped is by cops of color, by black or Latino cops. So it's not just white cops, by the way. It's a system that's racist rather than the individual police officers.
And what do they tell you when they first stop you? You heard the Paul Brown clip. Did they tell you there was a crime in this vicinity and there's an individual who somewhat resembles you who's been described as a suspect?
That's exactly the line they use, exactly the line. I know that's the standard line because my brother is a Nassau County police officer, and he tells me that's the standard line that you use when you stop someone who's not who you're really looking for and have to invent some sort of probable cause.
Well, if it's not the case, then why do they stop you?
Well, again, I think it has to do with the nature. I look like the kind of person they want to stop. That is, I look like a young black guy. I'm not. I'm a middle-aged guy. I'm tall. I'm muscular.
Right.
So they think I'm
But
like
I mean, you seem to – I just want to go a little further because you seem to imply that what your brother, the police officer, told you is that it's sort of bogus. It's a line that they use.
Of course it is.
That we're looking
sure
for somebody who resembles you. But if they're not looking for somebody who resembles you, why would they bother to stop you?
Because they're looking for someone like me to profile, not someone who's an actual suspect. They're looking for, you know, young people of color who in their minds are automatically suspects. But again, I want to decide the system, not the individual cops, because this has happened to me mostly with cops of color.
Thank you very much for your call. I really appreciate it. Dennis in North Salem up in Westchester County. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello, Brian. How are you? Glad to talk to you. I have been stopped and frisked on Wednesday and again on Sunday, and that was at the airport. And I'm a white 60-year-old male, and I was taking a flight, and I had to go through the screening process, which involves stopping and frisking. And every time I enter a courthouse, whether it's a federal courthouse or a state courthouse, I'm an attorney, and I'm a white man, and I go through the stop and frisk screening profiling process.
Because everybody is. That's happened to me when I've walked through at the airport or into a courthouse down here in Lower Manhattan. So that's just the system that's universal to everybody who enters.
I accept the screening. I accept the profiling for the greater good of the community. And that's my position.
Thank you very much. Pedro in Tenafly, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I'm a real big fan of your show.
I appreciate it. And you're a former officer, I understand?
That's correct. I'm a former New York City police officer.
And have you stopped and have you frisked?
Yes, I've stopped and frisked and filled out the stop and frisk form, which is a 52, which I believe most of your listeners are familiar to. The reason for my call is because I wanted to provide a particular perspective into the conversation.
Good.
That I often feel is missed.
Go ahead. You can start anywhere you want.
Well, police officers, a lot of times you hear this kind of generalizations about how we have to prove that we're doing anything on the street. A lot of times we do have to stop somebody and we do have to speak to them because a possible crime has been committed. And we would be lackluster in our attempts to be good police officers if we do not make proper documentation. And without the risk of saying that we have absolute quotas in the system, 52s or UF 52s, as they're called, the stop and frisk forms, were badly being abused by supervisors as a form to show that we are out there actually doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise to me whatsoever that the number of UF 52s are going through the roof when, in actuality, the kind of, I guess you could say, the kind of behaviors that are being described by the general public have pretty much all remained the same, in my opinion.
So that's some really interesting concept about context about the pressure and why these numbers may be going up. So now take me to the next level, if you're willing. And that is, all right, you're a cop on the beat, you're feeling this pressure to whatever degree, and now you got to decide who to stop. Who do you stop?
Well, just to also to bring a little more to the conversation, just so your listeners are well aware and put it in context. If you commit any sort of violation in the city of New York and you're unable to produce identification, you're subject to hold or arrest, and that's a law. And a lot of times police officers choose to use the discretion and not arrest and hold every single person that's unable to produce identification.
Mm-hmm.
If you urinate in public, I doubt that you would want to be arrested. But if you are unable to produce identification, we have to have some sort of documentation, some sort of mechanism to prove that
right.
we did stop you, we did question you.
But if I could move this in a slightly different mm-hmm. direction, the stop and frisk program in particular is supposed to be a gun removal program. And in theory, you heard the clip of Deputy Commissioner Brown saying, in theory, it's those people who resemble a suspect after a particular crime has been committed, especially where there's suspicion of possession of a firearm. How much does that reflect reality in terms of who you stop? I mean, obviously, if you see somebody publicly urinating or whatever, I realize the broken windows approach, you're going to stop people when they seem to be
exactly.
in the act of committing minor offenses. But I think this is different than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well,
trying to get the guns off the street through stop and frisk.
Well, there's two very polar opposites as far as perspective. The gentleman that was urinating, I mean, he could have a gun on him, you know? Or, you know, the person that perfectly fits the description that of the suspect that we're attempting to actually find may not be the person that we're trying to find, and they feel victimized. And, you know, I do have a lot of compassion for the individuals because, you know, as a minority, you know, as a person that resided in New York City mm-hmm. before I was a police officer, I felt the exact same way. And then being on the other side, you know, a lot of times it's not so clear cut as to say that, you know, I'm looking for a gun on
yes.
you. It's actually inappropriate to generalize or to just say, hey, mm-hmm. that particular individual, I'm going to stop them because they fit a demographic of a person that I believe to be holding a gun.
Right.
That's not right.
But does it happen? Because that's exactly what the critics say happens and it isn't supposed to happen.
Exactly. And I believe that any police officer that's worth this, that believes that what they're doing out there is the right thing to do, is going to take a moral stance and say, I'm not just going to stop somebody because of the way they look. But if they happen to fit a particular description that was given out over the radio and then that we, in our due diligence, have to stop somebody, you know, if the description is, you know, a white male with a white T-shirt and blue jeans, and you see a white male with a white T-shirt and blue jeans.
Yeah, that's half the guys on the Upper West Side.
Away. Okay, well, then if the description is a black male with a white T-shirt and blue jeans and Timberlands, you know, that's pretty much everybody
yeah,
on
right.
the block.
There you go. Pedro, thank you. I really appreciate your call, and I appreciate all of you who called in to talk about your being stopped or stopping experiences. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.